Timory Millington has been a passionate advocate for life as long as she can remember. Even with a busy speaking and radio schedule, she finds time to devote to her creative love of dance. Don Johnson is an author, speaker, and major motion picture film producer. Both hold master's degrees in theology, and together they cover the week's hottest stories from a Catholic worldview. From the Southern California studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending with Don and Timory.
So this show is a real treat. We don't often interview people on Trending, and we found that this interview is so important to the current crisis in our culture surrounding gender ideology. So many people now kind of coming out saying they're confused about whether they're male or female, and also the crisis of sexual attraction and how that then kind of directs us in different orientations sometimes. So our guest is Daniel Mattson, and I want to throw this out there for any young ears, especially parents. This is going to be a very profound podcast and radio show. So if you're listening live, I'm going to ask you your choice whether or not you want to put it on hold for right now, but please go back and listen to the podcast. We will have it posted right away.
Thank you. And as you said, Timory, we are talking with Daniel Mattson. He is a writer, speaker, and professional musician. Indeed, he is a professional orchestral trombone player. Daniel has performed and presented master classes around the world, including at the famed St. Petersburg Conservatory in Russia. He is also the author of a brand new book from Ignatius Press that I think is absolutely must reading today. It's called Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. Daniel Mattson, welcome to Trending.
Hey, thanks so much for having me on today. I really, really appreciate it.
Let's start with some of the basics, Daniel. Why did you decide to write this book now?
Well, I'll tell you, I think the call is from St. Peter, who said, always be prepared to give an answer for the hope that lies within you. And my life was really the life of the prodigal son. I grew up in God's family. I was baptized into the church, but like so many of us, I left the church behind because I thought it was archaic and outdated, especially in the realm of human sexuality. And so I went my own way, and now by the grace of God, I've come back, and I really find that it is good news what the church has to offer to a world so confused today about human sexuality and in particular sexual identity. So I felt called to write this book and to share my story and to help promote the idea that chastity really is good news and that the Catholic Church is the place to find peace, fulfillment, and happiness in these confusing times.
I love that, Daniel, and I think something that really stands out to me in you sharing your story is that when you begin right at the very beginning, it's like the origins of Daniel Mattson, you start by going through where the same-sex attraction kind of began to stem for you, and this is something that's very unpopular. The self-proclaimed pagan feminist lesbian, as she calls herself, Camille Paglia, says it's not popular to turn back and look into kind of the origin story of how this began. Can you walk us through that a little bit? Because I think it's very revealing.
Well, we live in a culture now that has, in the past 30 years on this issue of homosexuality, really seen a revolution. It's remarkable to consider what has happened really since 1969, when the gay rights movement began at the Stonewall riots, but really since the 80s, there was really a remarkable move to change the question about human sexuality from behavior to identity. So all before the 70s was really the time when the gay rights movement began, and they made this push to change our conception of what it meant to be quote unquote gay. Usually in the past, the whole history of the world, the distilled wisdom of humanity, has never considered that the dividing line of human sexuality is between gay and straight. They've always recognized that it's male and female, and that men and women can have a variety of sexual desires or sexual behaviors, but that doesn't change our fundamental reality. But the great goal of the gay rights movement, and particularly in the 70s and 80s, was to transform the debate from behavior to identity. And so now a young person growing up today who might have attractions to the same sex is confronted with what the world says: your feelings define you, your bodily reality, the language of the body, which we learned from St. John Paul II, the theology of the body. The language of the body doesn't reveal truth to us. It's our feelings that define reality for us. And I was young enough to grow up in a world that I wasn't confronted with this division of gay and straight. I really confronted the word gay and the concept of the gay person maybe in adolescence, but I didn't think of myself as a different person until later in my 20s and 30s when I started accepting what the world was saying. I guess my feelings do define me. So one of the things I write about in the book is I write the history of where the concept of the homosexual person came from. And most people don't know that history. The idea of the homosexual person really came into the modern imagination with the invention of the word. Mm-hmm. The idea that this is a discrete type of person, and now we divide the world between gay and straight rather than male and female. So that's one big message of my book. I feel like we have to reclaim reality, and part of that includes reclaiming the words we use, particularly in our church.
I want to return to some of your experiences as a youth, but let's stick with that idea of words defining reality and how the movement abused language. And you have a section in the book I love where you quote C.S. Lewis about how the abuse of language leads to the abuse of power. Can you just give some examples of how the language changed over the years, just to give some people some idea of what you're talking about here? Because I think this is really important. The language, we can't just dismiss the language we use. Ultimately, that's leading us to think about the world in a particular way, isn't it?
Well, if you think about the religion of Christianity, we are a religion of the word. What do we read in Genesis? God spoke. He said, "Let there be light," and there was light. And in John, what do we say? In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In Genesis, there is something powerful in the Genesis narrative. What do we see in God? He sees what he creates. He beholds it, and he judges that it's good. And part of that beholding and judging is giving it its proper name. So he sees the light, and he calls it day. He sees the darkness, he calls it night. He sees the dry land, and he calls it earth, right? So we see that narrative of naming things, seeing things as they really are. And we see that that is a divine prerogative to give things their right word. And what does our Creator do to man? He gives to man the divine prerogative of giving things their names. We see that first when God brings the animals to Adam. And he says to see what he would call them, and what he called them, that was their name. There's something beautiful about that. God loved us enough to participate in the word, the giving of the word, the giving of the right word to things. And, of course, in Eden, Adam saw things as they really were. He saw with the eyes of God. So when he gave words to the animals, that's what they were. That's what God intended them to be. And Adam saw with the eyes of God. Then what are the first recorded words of Adam? I wonder how many people have reflected on this. In a religion of the word, what are the first words that Adam, the king, prophet, and priest of the Garden of Eden, what did he say? It's when God brought Eve to him, and suddenly we see these recorded words, "She shall be called woman, for out of man she came. She is bone of my bone, flesh of my flesh." And then immediately the two become one. So in that word, we see that in giving Eve the right word of woman, he knows what his vocation is now. It's finally there in human sexuality, in this division of man and woman, male and female, that we really see the Trinity echoed. And that's the beautiful message of the church's vision of human sexuality. Then what do we see in Jesus when he walked incarnate among us as a man? Have you not read from the beginning he created a male and female? That's when I argue that those are really the only words that encompass the fullness of our human sexuality. And think about this. It would just be so glaring on our ears to say Jesus was incarnate as a straight man, or that Mary realized her heterosexual orientation by giving birth to Jesus. There's an impoverishment there when we think of these words in connection with our Lord and our Lady. And I think so too with us. So for me, I say I'm a man. I'm a male, and I have particular desires that do not define me at all. And I think that's a liberating freedom.
Well, and that appeals to the basic truth of reality itself. You know, you appeal back to language and the word, and you give that story in the Garden of Adam. And that self-knowledge, it makes me think of many years ago, and I'd love to kind of hear your thoughts on this. I was writing a blog, and I was writing about a child with Down syndrome. And I said, referred to the child as a Down syndrome baby. And a good friend of mine wrote to me and said, please refer to these children as babies with Down syndrome. And I've taken that into all of our conversation in the movement about gay rights and so forth, that there are people with same-sex attraction. A person in and of himself is not gay because that's not what defines them.
Let's get Daniel's response to that when we come back. You're listening to Trending with Dawn and Timory. Our special guest this hour is Daniel Mattson, author of the brand new book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. We will be right back.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending with Dawn and Timory, applying timeless principles to today's hottest topics.
Welcome back to the show, Dawn and Timory, today with Daniel Mattson, author of the brand new book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. Before the break, Daniel, Timory was sharing a story about how she referred to a baby with Down syndrome. And I thought that was actually quite profound. I just wanted to get your thoughts on that before we move on to a different question.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. The church sees us all as beloved sons and daughters of God. That's our true identity. And a child with Down syndrome is as wonderfully made in the image and likeness of God as any other one. So I think it's beautiful that you have do that, because I think it's the same thing. A baby with Down syndrome, the identity is a baby, a child of God. And so too with me, the church actually, a lot of people don't know this, in its 1986 letter on the pastoral care of the homosexual person really provides some liberty to me. It says, today, the church provides a badly needed context when she refuses to consider the person as a heterosexual or a homosexual, but rather as an heir and child of God. And it says, the preamble to that is, no one can be reduced to their sexual attractions. And I think the world is so gone mad with this that the church really does provide this wonderful context to say, no, I am a man, I'm a son of God who happens to live with same-sex attraction. It doesn't define me, and that's a liberating truth that the church provides to men like me.
That's an important point that I hadn't really thought about before I read the book. Even the terms homosexual and heterosexual are somewhat demeaning. They reduce the full scope of the person, don't they?
Well, you know, what they do is they really distill our sexual identity to really the sexual and romantic components of our identity. And one thing that the church has really taught me is that, what is our sexuality about? As a man, my sexual identity is really fulfilled through fatherhood. And that doesn't need to be through biological fatherhood. I fulfill my calling as a man by modeling our Heavenly Father and his relationship to Jesus. And Jesus himself, I write this in the book, he was a spiritual father to so many, but he never had any sort of sexual outlet in the sense that the modern world talks about it. But has there ever been a man who has more fully lived out his sexuality as a man than Jesus Christ, who never engaged in sexually intimate acts with people. This is one of the great gifts that the church has given me. And of course, with women, it's motherhood in some way, spiritual motherhood. That it doesn't have to be biological motherhood. And that I think that is helpful to all single people, and especially to couples where they might be infertile. There's a way that we give of ourselves in ways that are unique to being a man or a woman that are connected with fatherhood and motherhood. And so these terms, heterosexual and homosexual, really I don't think are helpful. I think we talk about heterosexuals too much too, and I think that that limits our understanding of human sexuality too. So the words we use, I think, really matter. And like we've been talking about, that's a big part of my book, which is why I don't call myself gay. If I may, one of the other reasons I think it's so important to talk about people with same-sex attraction or gender identity confusion is because of what it does to our young people. I was at a parish in the Pittsburgh diocese, and a young man submitted an anonymous question. He said, "If I am attracted to the same sex, does it mean I'm gay?" This kid, he's 14, 15, 16, mm-hmm. wrestling with this question, who am I? And the world and everyone around him says, yes, you're gay, or maybe you're bisexual, but you're certainly not straight. And I was glad I was there to say to that young man, your feelings and your attractions don't define you. That is not who you are. You are a beloved son of God. And the church is there to guide you into truth and into fulfillment of life through the virtue of chastity. And the virtue of chastity says, you, I'm a man that may have particular struggles and battles, but in no way am I defined by the world's view of human sexuality. And I think that's particularly for our young people. We need to start speaking about the how impoverished the division of gay and straight is. I think there's so many young people just wrestling with this silently, and they don't know where to turn. That's one reason I wrote the book, too.
Well, when we talk about same-sex attraction, people say, oh, well, am I gay? I remember, I try to emphasize this when I talk to teens and young adults in chastity education, talk about how gay is a lifestyle. It's not who you are. And I think that in talking about that, we begin to understand when there's a sense of curiosity, let's say, even from a young age, about our bodies and exploring our own bodies, that there's something to be understood in both the harms of that and also in a sense, and how there's this just basic curiosity and maybe how we can respond to that, because that can be very formative, and that was a part of your story as well.
Right. I love, there's just a great moment in the pontificate of Pope Benedict the 16th, and he's with a group of young people called Italian Action, and one of the young people there asked him a question about love and essentially romantic and sexual relationships, and Pope Benedict said, I remember what it was to be a young man, to see myself growing up and maturing, even in my body, and wondering what the future held. And we look in the mirror, we see these changes taking place. And then he says this beautiful thing. He says, but we truly grow up when we allow somebody to look in the mirror beside us and point and tell us who we truly are. And that's what the church does. It comes to these young men and women who are growing into the fullness of their masculinity or femininity and says, let us guide you into what the truth of this. And they look in the mirror and say, do these attractions define me? Does it mean I'm gay? And the church says, no. You are called to the same vocation and responsibility and calling of dignity of every other man or woman who's ever lived. And I find that there's a beautiful vision there. You know, St. Paul says we look through a mirror dimly, and how often do we do that in adolescence, right? And it's the church and the eyes of chastity that help us to see correctly and clearly. Pope Paul VI, he said, the church is expert in humanity. And how important is that for our young people today to know who they truly are? And if the church needs to be bold in claiming the dignity of our true identity, especially for young people.
We're talking with Daniel Madsen. He is the author of a brand new book called Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. Daniel, speaking of young people, one of the great dangers to our young people is pornography, and porn played a part in your story. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the danger of porn, if you will?
Yeah, porn, unfortunately, I just became addicted to porn as soon as I saw it. I write a chapter in there about the damage that porn did to me. And, of course, it was so much more difficult growing up in the early 80s, as I was. But there's no one more conniving than a teenager boy who wants to get porn. And now we have iPhones that it's instantaneously there. And it really misshapes our view both of ourselves, of what it means for, I'm speaking as a man, what it means to be a man, and, of course, our view of women. And part of my story is I was attracted to women at times in my life, and I really found that pornography objectified women for me. But men, for me, it actually became because of rejection that I experienced from other girls growing up in elementary school and junior high school. I found myself desiring to be the men that they went out with, and they were always the athletic type. As you mentioned in the opening, I'm a professional musician. Well, now I have a career doing that, but in high school I was kind of self-conscious about it. I thought it wasn't very manly to be a musician, and I envied the guys on the basketball team, and if I, you know, the athletic type, I started kind of desiring to be the men I saw in pornography. Eventually it turned to gay pornography. But I have a quote in there from St. Gregory of Nyssa, and he says, "In some ways, we become our own mothers and fathers and shape ourselves based on the choices we make." And what that is it's really, we have the fallen nature of original sin, of course, but we do misshape ourselves by the choices we make. We are, St. Paul says, we need to be transformed and by the renewal of our mind. Well, I deformed my mind through pornography, and by the grace of God, He is continuing still to heal that deformed nature of the choices that I made. And I do think for some men in particular, young men, pornography plays a strong role in their attractions to the same sex. Sometimes, you know, sin always becomes tame, and you need something more. It's like a drug. You need something deeper. And for me, that was one reason I looked at men more, because it was more of a hit, as it were, and eventually I had no attractions to women. But I just to parents who might be listening, if your son or daughter has access to the iPhone at night, don't allow that. The devil is a prowling lion. I spoke to a 16-year-old girl who told me once at one of my talks that she became addicted to pornography at age 10 and was addicted for 5 years. And by the grace of God, she was free. So this isn't simply something that boys have to deal with. It's girls, too, who are... And this is... I just read something recently, too, that these girls are starting to hate their bodies because they see these airbrushed bodies in pornography, and they really think that they're horribly ugly, and this is Satan, our enemy, just loves porn for what it does to our young people, which is why we need to really fight against it.
Absolutely. We will be right back with Daniel Madsen. He is the author of Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. You're listening to Trending. We'll be right back.
This is Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.
So we're here with Daniel Madsen, and we're talking about his book, Why I Don't Call Myself Gay. And before the break, Daniel, you were talking about how this envy driven by lust, and this was envy for kind of the way that other men looked or behaved or the attitudes they had, how that drove you to desire to be someone other than yourself. How do you see that playing in both for men and women? You mentioned before the break how girls are struggling today with body image as a result of porn.
Well, this... this is one of the great ploys of the enemy, right? One of the things I write in my book is I say one of the deepest challenges of my life is to believe that it's good that I exist and that it's good that I exist in the way that I exist. And when I was in high school, I mentioned earlier that I was so good at music. I was named by the Detroit News in my senior year as the outstanding graduate in the state of Michigan.
Wow.
In music. For out of 33,000 students in the whole music program of the state, I was the top dog. But I would have traded that to be on the basketball team of our Class D school. It was such a strange, misshapen image of what it really means to be a man. Well, now, 20 years later, none of my classmates who played basketball are making a career as a professional basketball player. You know, I'm making a career doing this. And one of the journeys of my healing is to say, God gave me these gifts, these musical creative gifts, and indeed they are masculine. There's nothing effeminate about being a musician, but I had all these doubts in the realm of physicality. I don't need to be able to hit a basketball shot to be a really good man or a fully man, made in the image and likeness of God. And so I just had a misshapen view of what it means to be a desirable man. And even that's the wrong way that I was thinking about it. I was thinking about, well, who would ever desire me when I was thinking about women? Well, the fact of the matter is our dignity and the beauty that we have as created children of God doesn't come from other people. It comes from God. I'm a son of the King of Kings. I am fearfully and wonderfully made. And especially high school students, they think, oh, there's all these little quirky things that I'm embarrassed to tell people about. And we kind of have this whitewashing of personalities, and basically you have to be like people who are on TV, and you have to be the way they are, and rather than be who you truly are. And we squelch so many of these beautiful things in our lives because we're afraid people they'll mock it or something like that. And God has made us all uniquely ourselves. There's no one on the face of the planet who has reflected the image of God like I have, or like the two of you have. And one of the great things that we need to do is to try to see ourselves the way God sees us, as He delights in us. And that's one thing I write in my book. It was really profound for me to realize that God likes me. God really likes us all. It's not just this sort of obligatory love, but He likes me. And the fact of the matter is, I'm a bit overweight. God doesn't love me any less because I don't have a six pack.
What you've described, Daniel, really is the antidote to so much of the pain and suffering in our culture, isn't it? We have these crazy stereotypes of what male and female should be, and now with all of the gender nonsense that's going on, these poor kids, the parents are looking at their kids and, oh, you know, my kid likes to wear pink, or he's artistic or whatever. So, but it's just nonsense, isn't it? I mean, let the kid be artistic or be a musician. I mean, we as the Catholic Church, we really have the good news that people are missing. So that was really beautifully put. You say in your book that you've started to see and understand your same-sex attraction through a lens of suffering, not sexuality. And redemptive suffering really became a theme in your story. Could you just speak to that topic a little bit?
Yeah, I really found a lot of wisdom in St. John Paul II's letter on suffering, Salvifici Dolores. He says suffering is the privation of a good. It's something that we have either deprived ourselves of through our choices, or something that should be present we've been deprived of through some sort of other means. And what I began to see is the church's wisdom. My attractions to men were really in replacement of my true sexual orientation, that I didn't really experience the good of my true sexual orientation, which is written in my body. So rather than saying, well, I am a different form of sexual creature, I suffer from this privation of this good that should be there. And so when I began to look at sexuality and homosexuality through the lens of suffering, I began to see it completely differently. Mm-hmm. It then becomes this invitation to unite the suffering that I have with the cross. And a lot of people don't focus on what I think is one of the most important parts of the three paragraphs of the Catechism on homosexuality. There's a line there that says that those who live with this should unite with the sacrifice of the Lord's cross any difficulties that arise from their condition. Well, that's the gospel in miniature, I think, that we all have difficulties in life, but for me that was a life-giving answer to the suffering that I experienced. There was something that turned that around for me, to say that when I feel loneliness, for example, God is saying, you know, I was lonely on the cross too. I was lonely in the garden, and I carried that loneliness for the sake of the world, and I'm asking you to do the same thing. That's one of the chapters that was most helpful for me to write, was a chapter that I called The Gift of Loneliness. And I think there's a universal application there. Even married people are lonely at times.
Yeah.
And thanks be to God that we have loneliness on this earth, even in our most intimate relationships, because we will always know then that the fulfillment of all our desires can only ever come from being in communion with God. God never wants us to be so happy on this earth, in marriage or in friendships or in our family, that we ignore him. And God allows these little sufferings in our life so that we can love others through uniting with the cross of Christ on their behalf. For me, that becomes a way I can do penance. I can offer up my loneliness or whatever sufferings I experience for the sake of those men that I was intimate with, who I helped lead astray, and I say, dear God, okay, I'm feeling lonely today. May my loneliness help Jason, who is the fellow I write about in the book. So it really transforms the view of suffering. But I do want to, maybe on the other side, I do want to talk about the positive things that I've found, that there is joy and life and happiness that the church provides for me too. It's not just loneliness. Seeing my sexuality the right way also is, like I say in the subtitle of the book, it helped me find peace and joy as well.
Daniel, I love how you appeal to John Paul II's letter of Salvific Dolores, because suffering, really as redemptive suffering, not just suffering in and of itself, but like you said, this appeal to the cross is something pertinent to those who are struggling with same-sex attraction, but you even said in marriage. And when I look at your book and your story, what I see is the battle of an individual, which we all have, to live a chaste lifestyle. And that's what's at the heart of marriage's redemptive suffering, or whatever the suffering might be. And that's so profound to your story and taking you into a joyful place.
I think when people are young, of course, they believe that, okay, the only way I'm going to have a happy life is if I get married and have a family. And then they get married and they realize, you know, this is difficult and it's a challenge. Right. I see it in my brothers who are married. I see it in my close friends who are married. You know, they've had their challenges, but what we realize is God calls us to our particular vocations so that we might become more like him. Marriage is primarily about becoming a saint. Me as a single person, it's primarily about me becoming a saint. And how do we become a saint? We follow the path of Christ, and we lay our lives down for each other. And, of course, that's difficult and painful at times. So I think that the virtue of chastity in the realm of human relationships is really its corrective lens that helps us to see things as they really are. Too many men, young men, they think about their wives primarily as a way to have some sort of sexual release. How often does that happen? And that the virtue of chastity says, no, you are to treat your life like Christ treated the church. And, of course, part of the virtue of chastity is that some women may not want to be sexually intimate with their husbands after a certain amount of time. And chastity says, as St. Paul says, no, this is part of the virtue of chastity for you in your life. Sometimes it's unchaste to not have sexual relationships, particularly in marriage, and we don't think about that. And the church just has such a rich understanding of human sexuality. If we are guided by chastity, that is the only path to joy, peace, and fulfillment in the realm of human sexuality. And, you know, the world thinks that's nuts, but that's one reason I wrote this book, is to say, no, this is the guidebook for flourishing. I think about chastity like my rescue dog, who would always try to get out of the dog park or run away from me. The fence of the dog park is there to protect her. And we think of the world's view of the church's way of same sex is thou shalt not. But the fence is there so that we might flourish and have life to the full, as Christ said. And so I one of the reasons I read this book is to say, let us reach a point where we really believe that chastity is good news for a lost world.
Very well said. We're talking with Daniel Madsen. He is the author of Why I Don't Call Myself Gay, How I Reclaimed My Sexual Reality and Found Peace. We will be right back on Trending.
From the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio, you're listening to Trending. Trending. With Don and Timmery, offering an eternal perspective on today's hottest topics.
Don and I are here with Daniel Madsen, and I think that in talking about same-sex attraction, sexuality, all of these elements, it is so pertinent to each and every one of us. And it makes me think of chastity and how that takes us forward in our vocation and how we can find truly peace in living a single chaste lifestyle. What do you have to say for that, Daniel? Because this is what you're living.
Well, I speak about chastity not as some expert, but rather because for so long I lived an unchaste life. And now, having embraced the virtue of chastity, I can see the difference. I can see that it leads to freedom and fulfillment. Like I was saying before, that great line, I came that they might have life and have it abundantly, to have it to the full. And that includes in the realm of human sexuality. But see, a lot of young people, of course, they say, well, all right, the church says to you, Dan, that, okay, you can't have a sexually intimate relationship with anybody. Well, the church is being mean to you. How can you have a fulfilling life like that? And then on the other side, I've had some young people say to me, said, well, look, I need to be able to test the waters, as it were, to know if I'll be sexually compatible. So we need to live together a little bit. Well, we have just turned the cart upside down. The world says that what marriage and happiness is about is somehow having sexual pleasure. Well, this is just, we don't see things clearly. Isaiah says you turn things upside down. And of course, our model here, it has got to be our Lord. No one had a more fulfilling life living out his sexuality than Jesus Christ, our Lord, and his mother, and they never had sexually intimate acts. So that just tells us that there can be a fulfilling life for the person who's called the single. Now, for me, when people are tempted to say, the church singles out you people who have same-sex attraction for some particularly onerous treatment, you're going to be alone your whole life, right? Well, it's very helpful for me to look at the fact that if you take every single person who's same-sex attracted on the face of the planet, there are far more people, men and women, who will be single their whole lives, who are attracted to the opposite sex and who desire to be married, than there are same-sex attracted people on the planet. So I'm not some special group. I have close friendships now with some folks my age. We're all single for whatever reason. And we are working together to have a fulfilling life. We get together on a regular basis. We build a sense of community and deep friendships. And those aren't tainted by using each other for some sort of sexual pleasure. This is what shacking up is. It's mutual self-exploitation, and it always will bring damage to us. It always hurts us. When I talk to young people, I like to refer to a report in U.S. News & World Report that said, who is the most satisfied in their sexual relationships? Well, you know, that's not the most elegant or elevated way to speak to high school students, but it's where they're at. And right. The fact of the matter is, It's Catholics who are married, who save themselves for marriage, and who don't engage in birth control. Well, hello. Should that be any surprise to us?
Yeah.
Because the fact of the matter is the world has the wrong user manual. Cosmopolitan and Men's Health is not the right user manual on human sexuality.
Are you sure about that?
Sure. I am very sure. I can talk about this when I talk to high school students. Sometimes I say, every month those magazines say that they've got 53 new techniques to try. And they've been doing that for 30 years. Well, they always fail. Hmm. They keep having to come up with some new idea, and it's because they have the wrong user guide. And the church is the one who says, in all things, we will guide you into peace, fulfillment, and happiness. For a married man and woman, that means that they will never contracept, and they will be together forever. For a single person, true happiness is to refrain from having sexual relationships with someone. And it's hard for people to wrap their head around, but this is why one reason I wrote the book, too. People don't really listen to the church as much as they listen to witnesses. And I hope to provide some inspiration in that regard. That, yeah, there's happiness and peace, but it's difficult, too. I write in the book, I say, I think I'll be free from sexual temptation about 6 weeks after I'm 6 feet under. You know, it takes a lifetime. But don't we like the struggle? Don't we want to? Why do people run marathons? They don't run them because they're easy. They run them because they're challenging. And we have to view chastity as running the race, as St. Paul says to us. And when you start running, I don't run. I hear from people who do. It's difficult to run, but then they become to love it. And that is what I'm experiencing with my own journey in chastity.
It is difficult, but you spend a whole section. Part three of your book is on living it out. Before we end the show, can you give us just a few tips? What are some of the good tips you have for living a chaste life?
Well, yeah, one of the greatest things is to realize this great lesson of St. Paul, that it is no longer I but Christ. So fundamental to living out all the virtues is that Jesus is our holiness. And with that kind of gentleness to ourselves, especially for me who is really addicted to things, I need to be gentle with myself. In the journey, if you're the prodigal son and you walked all that way, you got to walk home. There's going to be some stumbling on the way. You be gentle. You go to confession as often as you need to. You pick yourself back up. And then the Eucharist will help us. Adoration. I go to adoration not when I'm tempted, but rather when I'm tempted to self-loathing, because sometimes pornography is motivated or people act out sexually is from self-loathing, and it's a drug. I go to the Adoration Chapel to claim my belovedness. Now, if I have a temptation, what I do, I gotta get out of the house. I gotta call a friend. I gotta go ride a bike. I gotta, you know, all of the church fathers said, pray, but then if you have temptation in the body, go do something else. But I also find where I have pornography, I have to replace those images and thoughts with good things. I love reading about the saints. I love reading the church fathers. I love, and of course, reading scripture. It will feed us. And of course, the Eucharist. When you know, I try to go to daily mass when I can. You know, it's not always, but that really helps. But I have a section of the book where I call the wisdom of the saints, and it's inspiring to realize how many saints lived unchaste lives, like St. Augustine, and we can take inspiration from them and call on their intercession. St. Augustine, please help me. Please pray for me. So, you know, and of course, if someone is addicted to pornography, you need to get help. You can't battle that on your own, or if you're any sort of sexual addiction, you need to get help. And there are great ministries, something called the Living Waters Program. It's very great. There are, you know, of course, get a filter, you know, Covenant Eyes, all these different things. We have to take some ownership over this. And I'm in the courage apostolate, which is a great ministry for men and women with same-sex attraction. And it's great. I have an accountability system. We get together once a month, and oftentimes we'll get together at other times, and we just spur each other on. You can't go it alone is one of the fundamental things. And, of course, the final thing, praying the rosary, just asking for the intercession of our Blessed Mother. And for me as a man, St. Joseph, the most chaste spouse of Mary, is a great inspiration for me, too. Those are just a few ideas that helped. And, you know, the journey for me, I still stumble and fall, but I have to pick myself back up and say, all right, God, help me in my weakness with the strength of your divinity. And as the Catechism says, to men like me, gradually and slowly we can reach Christian perfection just as anyone else can. And that's just one of the final thing I'll say is we are pilgrims on a journey of becoming who we were meant to be. And we can do that by the grace of God. We have to have patience with ourselves, trust in God, that he will strengthen our weakness. And every time we stumble and fall, he's going to pick us up just like a loving mother or father would with a toddler who's just learning how to walk and send them on their way. We have to view our God as our Father who loves us and just will so we need to run to him for his mercy, and he'll set us on our way again.
So beautifully put, Daniel Madsen. Thank you so much for being here today. Before we say goodbye, tell people a little bit about where they can find you and where they can find your new book.
Well, yeah, it's published by Ignatius Press. You can find it at ignatius.com. I'm also in a documentary called Desire of the Everlasting Hills. You can learn more about my story at everlastinghills.org, everlastinghills.org. And The Courage Apostolate is couragerc.org, couragerc.org, which has a great list of resources, including some of my writings there. So thank you so much for having me on. It's a real blessing to chat with you all today.
Thank you for joining us, Daniel. And for anyone listening, please grab the link to this podcast and text it to your friends. Daniel has an incredible story that must be shared.
This has been Trending with Don and Timory on Immaculate Heart Radio. Trending. To learn more about Don Johnson or Timory Millington, or to book either of them to speak, visit donjohnsonministries.org or timory.com. And be sure to share and rate the podcast of the show on iTunes.